Way back when I was thinking about starting a high-ticket dropshipping business, the one thing I was looking for was someone to show me what one of these sites looks like. So John and I have done that for you at dropshipbreakthrough.com/go. So head to dropshipbreakthrough.com/go and watch the free training.
Welcome to the Dropship Podcast, where you'll learn how to build and grow a high-ticket dropshipping business and hear stories from successful e-commerce entrepreneurs. Let's kick this thing off.
Hey, welcome back to the Dropship Podcast, the Tactical Tuesday episode today. And today we are talking about five reasons your high-ticket dropshipping store isn't working. So if you've started your own high-ticket dropshipping business, you don't feel it's working well, you're not seeing the results you'd like to see, we're going to go through five steps that we go through when we look at other people's businesses to work out what the problem is, what's holding it back, what's holding it up. And almost always, particularly with people who are early on in their high-ticket dropshipping journey, the answer lies in one of these places.
I don't want to say it's shocking because it's not a huge number, but I've had this question come a few times. Like, you know, I'm 2 weeks in. I haven't got a sale. What's happening? Or I've been doing this. I've talked to a few people who've been doing it for 6 months and they haven't got a sale, right? And they haven't reached out to have someone actually dive in their business and walk through this. But if you were to have John or myself on a phone call with that question, here's exactly the steps we would walk through to figure out what's not working in your business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And look, starting right at the top, we'll run through these in order and discuss a little bit. But starting right at the top, the first thing I'm going to look at, particularly if I'm looking at somebody's site who I haven't spoken to before or haven't really had any contact with before, it's going to be simply to look at what niche are they serving, right? What products are they selling in their site? Who is their ideal customer? Do they even know who that is? Have they gone through the process of working that out? And are those things literally the right things to be selling or the right customer to be focusing on? I mean, the reality is that for high-ticket dropshipping, you know, niche selection or market selection has to be done in a particular way. And you are looking for particular things. And, you know, we do see people who have got that wrong right at the start, gone on and launched a business, and lo and behold, the business doesn't perform, because they're literally just selling the wrong things, or they're trying to sell to the wrong person, or they don't even know who they're selling to.
Yeah, I think we've done a couple episodes that might help you. If you think that might be you, go check out episode 30, 7 dropshipping niches to avoid, and get really John and I's opinion on why you should avoid niches like that or markets like that. And episode 32, a little bit of a fun one there, best high-ticket dropshipping products of 2022, where we literally just went through some guru lists and said yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And hopefully, like, through those two, you'll understand our criteria. Also, I'm pretty sure one of our very first episodes ever, I'm going to have to scroll a ways here to see, one of our very first episodes here on this this feed was like around niche election. And really, we took a two-parter. Looks like episode 13 and 14 really get John and I's thoughts here. If you think this is you, and understand why maybe you have a great niche or maybe you don't have a great niche, and really, you know, spoiler alert, it's about the who. It's not necessarily about the products. It's who we're serving and how we're serving them.
And this is always a tough one for people to deal with, because if you've launched your business and then, you know, either someone tells you or you realize that you're actually just selling the wrong stuff, you're back to the drawing board, right? Sucks sometimes, but that's the reality. And I've told people before.
I hate to interrupt here, John, but like, I've heard this so many times. This is where it's like subjective, right? I think you and I we're pretty impressive at what we've done and who we've helped. But I don't know about you, John, but I get on a lot of calls who are like, I had a coach from XYZ course tell me this niche doesn't work, or this market doesn't work, or don't sell these products, or you can't run ads on these products. 9 times out of 10, that's blatantly false. I have no idea why they would tell people that. Maybe they worked with one guy where it didn't work or something. I have no idea. But typically that's bad advice. And I don't want to shit on anybody publicly. I don't want to say any names, but like, there's been some names of air quote coaches who come up a lot who say things don't work. And so, you know, I do think it is a little subjective though, right? Like what I believe works, you might not believe works. And what you believe works, somebody else might not think works. I'm not really sure how to gauge that either.
Yeah. And on the flip side, I mean, I've spoken to a number of people, even a few people who have come into our program who started somewhere else, learning from someone else. And they're in a business that they were told was good, that they should do, and is really not, you know, like, terrible idea, not workable for any number of reasons. And, you know, someone's told them, yeah, you should totally do that. That's a great idea. And, you know.
But it makes it sound like we know everything, right? And look, I do know everything, to ask my kids. But like, it's going to be subjective too. In my own experience, obviously we've coached hundreds and hundreds of students and seen, you know, great stores and we've seen not so great stores. And so I think we have a pretty good opinion, but it's really hard to say we know what's right and somebody else doesn't know what's right. And hopefully, you know, the listener, if you're listening to this, you probably like John and I, so maybe you believe us more, but it's definitely very subjective.
True. Cool. So you got to start. You've gone through, check the niche, all of that sort of thing. What are we looking at next?
For me, everything comes down to traffic and conversions. Like that is marketing to me, right? You have to get the right traffic to your website, and then you have to do everything right on the other end to convert people to a sale, right? And so you have to start with the traffic. If you're not getting the right people to your website and they're not in the right part of the funnel, which we'll go into here, then it's not going to matter. You could have the most beautiful, highly converting website on the planet. It's not going to matter if you have the wrong people coming there. So that's usually like niche selection, hit or miss. Talk to some people. I've seen some bad ones, but most likely if they've followed, especially if they followed what we put in our course or any of our podcasts, they likely chose a decent niche. But then it comes down to ads, and Google can be tricky. Their platform is not the easiest thing to use. I will say it's a little bit easier than, the behemoth in the room of Facebook, but it's also kind of confusing. And it's one of those things that I'm actually really good at, and I don't know why, and it just really came easy to me. So, I see people struggle with it, and I struggle because it came so easy to me. But you have to analyze your ads. You have to get in to Google and look around and see what keywords people are searching when they're coming to your site. If you're selling infrared saunas and all of your searches are for the term infrared sauna, yeah, I can see why you probably didn't have very many sales. If they're searching of a name and a model of a sauna, you likely know they're at the bottom of the funnel or they're getting close. Or if they're comparing to different products, they're getting closer to the bottom of the funnel. And if that's the traffic that's coming in, then you can probably move on to the next step. But you have to know who's coming to my website. And the way you determine that is what keywords are they using to get there? This whole game is a keyword game when it comes to high ticket drop shipping. And so you have to be able to place keywords inside of a funnel. Infrared sauna is very top of the funnel. You can imagine somebody sitting outside a bonfire, hanging out with their buddies, drinking beer. And Jimmy's like, man, I sat in an infrared sauna today. I feel amazing. And everyone's like, what's that? Right. And the guy in the corner who doesn't talk much pulls out his phone, types in infrared sauna on Google, clicks on your ad and is like, oh, cool. It's a wooden box. Amazing. And then they leave. And you think that's bad because they didn't buy, but that's just some guy who's at the very top of the funnel. Right. And so unless you have a plan in place to get them to come back to your website or move down the funnel or they give you their email so you can work them through some sort of customer journey, of course they're never going to buy. Now, again, if they're searching something more brand oriented or comparing products or something exact, an exact product, then you know they're closer down the funnel. Maybe they will buy you on one time. But I will say this, John, customer buying cycles are long. So unless you're selling a $20 product, you likely aren't going to sell somebody on the first time they come to your website. And I really think that's where a lot of people get this wrong. I'm going to make a video and I'll put it in the show notes. I'll make sure I get the video done before this podcast comes out. There's a report you can put in analytics. So if you've had sales before, click the video in the description below and I'll show you how to add a report to your Google Analytics that will show you if somebody comes to your website one time, here's what they're worth to you. Here's how many times they've converted. And if somebody comes two or more times, here's what they're worth to you. You'll be blown away. I've seen as low as three. That's probably the lowest I've ever seen, but I've seen 10. I've seen 50x more valuable to you if they come back one more time. And so, just to add on to the, we have ads suck here written as our note. If you don't have remarketing going, even in the smallest fashion, you're doing yourself a disservice.
Absolutely. That's all gold. And, I can't think of almost a single person that I've worked with one-on-one who has a site that they're, a bit concerned about as to whether it's working or not, that didn't have improvements to make in the ad space. Like almost every single time, which is fine. As you mentioned, like Google Ads, if you're doing it for the first time, you've never done it before, like you're not going to be a pro at it straight out of the gates, even with instruction. Like it's a completely new way of thinking. It's a new experience for you. And so it's okay to get some things wrong. But if you're not seeing the results, get some advice, get some help, talk to someone. Because there'll often be things that you can straighten out in there that will make a difference for sure.
I think the hardest part is if you're not following a direct system. Like I think, John, you built something pretty amazing inside of our course. I think you can get even tighter than that. In fact, we've argued about it on a Patreon episode before. But there's so many voices in the ether telling you to run ads a certain way, and they just, they don't work for e-commerce. We did an episode on this a couple back. If you want to check it out, really kind of giving you a high level overview of it, but you have to be pretty specific. You have to get granular. You have to stay on top of this. And again, like John said, you can't expect to be an expert in the beginning. Like, you know, I referenced my twins a lot. They cried and cried and cried as they fell off their bicycles when we took the training wheels off, and they said they could never do this, right? But, you know, they stuck with it, and over time they could ride their bike. And so you can do this too. It's just going to take some time to get good at this. But I think you can be good enough out of the gates if you follow a system or somebody who actually has a track record.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So
where do you go next, John? If you're getting the right traffic, yeah, the right people are coming to your website, then what? So your niche is good. The right people are coming. What else could be wrong?
Yeah. So the next thing is, you know, getting quality traffic, we go and look at the site itself. So what are the pages that people are landing on? Now, obviously, if you're running Google Ads traffic for a high ticket dropshipping store in the beginning, most people are going to be having their first experience of your site on a product page. So we're looking at the landing pages. What are they, literally, what are they communicating to your ideal customer when they land on your site? Are there things there that should be said that are not being said? Is the site easy to use? So we go through that whole experience that the customer has on the site, you know, and particularly if you have identified your ideal customer, does your site match that person? Like, you know, are you speaking directly to your ideal customer and nobody else on your site? Are you communicating why people should buy from you clearly? Like, what is your business's USP? Like, can people, so many sites I look at, that's not even communicated to the customer. There's no case made. Now, high ticket dropshipping is a competitive space, right? You're not selling your own products. You're selling other brands' products, which is great. But the reality is that other people are also selling those same products, and your ideal customer is going to see those other websites. So your website not only needs to do a great job of presenting the product and persuading people that it's the right product for them and their interests, their needs, whatever, but it also needs to persuade people that your business is the right, is the best business to buy from compared to those other businesses that you're competing against, that your customers are also seeing. And so that's a big area that I see people haven't thought through or haven't addressed on their site. And I think that makes a huge difference, particularly if you're running Google Shopping traffic, which is a comparison shopping engine. The literal point of that is that people will be looking at multiple sites at the same time to compare products and prices and all the rest of it, you know? So you've got to put some thought process into, and an exercise I will do is competitive analysis. Like, who else is selling the products you're selling? What do their sites look like? What do their, you know, what's their returns policies? What's their shipping policies? What's their pricing? You go through all this stuff. Are they adding extra value? And in Dropship Breakthrough, we actually have an exercise in the program where we've got a worksheet for people to go through their basically their niche and get all of that onto a page so you can actually identify where are the gaps in my market? Like, what is nobody talking about that I could talk about as a reason for people to buy from me? And then how can I translate that onto my landing pages so that my customers can see it and understand it instantly, right? And so once again, you get the right traffic to your site, they still need to get, they still need to see the right things when they land there for them to, one, have any chance of coming back and being one of those repeat visitors that you've just mentioned, but of course, then completing a sale on your site.
I just want to jump in here real quick and say, if you're loving this show, the number one thing you can do to help us right now is to smash that subscribe or follow button and leave us a review. It really does help us to grow this show and reach more people. And you can do it right now while you're listening. And also, if you've got a friend or two that you know should be listening to this show, make sure you share it with them or just send them to dropshippodcast.com. We'd love to have them join us as well. And real quick, I've got two additional dropshipping resources that we would love to share with you. The first is our free dropshipping Facebook group called the Dropship Tribe. It's all about high ticket dropshipping and you can learn a ton in there. All you need to do is jump onto Facebook and search the Dropship Tribe or go to facebook.com/groups/dropshiptribe and hit the join button. Now, if you're loving the Dropship Podcast and you want more, we actually have a members-only version of this show where we go even deeper into high-ticket dropshipping. We do question and answers with our members, website reviews, teardowns, and a whole bunch of other fun stuff. It's just $5 an episode, which is like a cup of coffee. And as a bonus, you get free access to our entire back catalogue of episodes when you join. So you can binge it without paying a cent. Just head over to patreon.com/dropshippodcast. And just as a note, you can find the links to both of those resources below in the show notes. Now let's dive back into the show.
Yeah, I think one of the big things I see is we'll pull up a product page as we're analyzing this, and it's got the exact same images and the exact same description as five of their competitors and the manufacturer, right? So if someone's doing comparison shopping like everyone does, right? You don't just go to one page and, sure, I'll spend $3,000 today. No problem. Sounds great. They're comparing. And if they see the same thing on every site, number one, you don't stand out. They're not going to remember who you are to come back and buy if they do want to come back and buy. But they're probably going to click away pretty quickly and just be like, all right, yep, I've read this before. Nothing new here, right? And so your ability to add some unique content, your ability to find some obscure YouTube videos of people reviewing this, if that's something you need to get on your site, or use that for an ability to write some copy, just be different. Find a way to be different. And, yeah, and like John said, portray what do you do different on your site than other people do.
And for high ticket dropshipping business, that does kind of, it does require a little bit more thought and creativity often, because, you know, if you're selling your own product, like, you know, with a unique brand on it that nobody else is selling, you can kind of lean a bit more on the product to be your unique thing, right? And you don't actually necessarily have to put, you should, but maybe you don't need to put as much effort into a few other things to sell the product. But high ticket dropshipping, the product is not going to be your unique reason that people are going to buy from you, right? Yes, there are some circumstances where you might have an exclusive deal on a product, and that's fantastic, but that's rare. And so it's got to be more about those other things that you can do differently. Yeah. Your copy, your images, videos, you know, but you can't even know what those things are unless you've actually looked at who you're competing against. Because when you do that, when you map it all out into a matrix of all of your competitors, you'll look and you'll see there's this thing that no one else is doing, right? That I think could be really important and really valuable for my customers. I'm just going to zero in on that, and I'm going to do that. I'm going to hammer that really hard, and that can literally be the thing. So, in my experience with my first store, and some people absolutely hate this, Ben will probably hate this, but I did that exercise. I had a look at things. I had identified when I was selling the lights. I had identified a problem that customers had in their customer journey, right, which was around not being able to understand whether the product was going to be a right fit for what they wanted to do with it, right? And they had no way of dealing with that or feeling good about that online. And so I looked at all my competition, and I realized, like, and this is some years ago now, so it's probably quite different now, but nobody really talked about a returns policy on their site, right? And so customers were worried, well, if I get this product and it doesn't fit the space I want to put it in, or it's a different color to the photos online, can I send it back? Like, literally, it was that simple. People didn't feel confident about that. So I just went out and I zeroed in on that. I put big stuff on my website, like, this is my returns policy. This is what we're going to do to help you so you can feel confident that you're buying the right light. I put it in all my email marketing. I talked about it in search text ads. It went everywhere. And my sales went up after I did that. Literally, just one thing. And so it's not always going to be that obvious and that simple, but that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah, one of my old businesses, very similar, John. We had what often dropshippers do of like 30-day return policy. If you send it back, you're paying shipping and paying the shipping the other way that I already paid for. 30% restocking fees. Like, they're trying to make money on a disgruntled customer. And so we had this thesis that, like, there's a real chance if we make this change, we're going to lose our ass. And we decided, let's go for it. And we just said 30-day, no questions asked, return it. We don't care. If you don't like it, return it. And sales went through the roof and returns didn't change, like, at all. And it was just by simply, like, taking away that fear of somebody that they, you know, if I buy this, I can't return it. Or I've looked at your thing, and if I return it, you know, these items were $8,000. So if they return them, they're going to have to pay $3,000 in restocking fees and return shipping. Like, no one's going to buy that, right? And so, like, while that made us feel good so we wouldn't lose money, it was pushing customers away. So that's funny too, John, that we kind of went the similar way there. And yeah, I think a lot of those fears are your own bias. But I like what you said there, John. Can you put up a matrix? Can you throw up your competitors all next to each other? Use Canva to throw up their product pages right up next to each other. And what can you do different to stand out? I think you'll likely see that they all kind of look the same. What can you do to be different? Can you just simply like mirror your photos? Like, that's one of the easiest little hacks, if you want to call it that, to just look different a little bit, right? And you definitely should rewrite your descriptions. And there's plenty you can do here, but when we're looking through these websites, we're looking for the obvious, and that's obvious. When you look the same, that's obvious.
Yeah, and a couple of little tips. Just on a little bit of a tangent here. There's a Chrome app that you can get, or a Chrome extension, sorry, that you can get called Go Full Page. There's probably a few others that do the same thing, but it's the one I use. Go Full Page, right? And when you're on a website, you know, if you're on a landing page on a website, sometimes they can be quite long, like multiple scrolls down. And so screenshotting it is really hard, right? To get the whole page, you'd have to take multiple screenshots. This extension will screenshot the whole page for you from top to bottom, even if it's like 10 scrolls long, and put it in a PDF or a JPEG or something like that. You can save to your desktop. And so what I'll do is I have like a folder on my desktop. Now, I do this for Dropship Breakthrough. I do it for any business I have, where every time I go to somebody's landing page and I want to remember it or be able to compare it side to side, I'll just take a massive screenshot of the whole page, and then I can put multiple of them up on my desktop at the same time and look at them and compare them and say, what are they doing? And then I build up like a swipe file of everyone's page. When I go to other websites and I see a website that I really love, that I think I could learn things from, because I forget things in about 10 seconds, I'll do a screen grab of the whole thing, save that PDF, and I can go back to it later and like kind of analyze that page and say, okay, what learnings can I take from this? I do it with ads. When I see ads that I love, I'll like get this thing and just screenshot the page and save it for later. And so you build up this big file of everything that's happening in your market, things you've seen that you really love or that you can learn from, and it's a good practice. The second thing I just wanted to say there is, because we both talked about it, right? Risk reversal. This is a concept you have to get your head around. You cannot sell a lot of anything. Doesn't matter what you sell, high ticket, low ticket, physical products, information products, if you expect your customer to assume all the risk in the transaction. Like, that's just a theory and a concept that you must get your head around if you want to be successful in literally any business on this planet. You have to address, it's called risk reversal in marketing talk. You have to address it in some way, right? Because your customer is thinking about it either consciously or subconsciously. And so if they don't get communicated to about that on your site, particularly if your competitors are, you are not going to win in that space, hands down, without a doubt. It's like a core fundamental marketing principle.
I feel your fear. I had the same fear when we made this move that, oh no, this is going to come back to bite us a lot. And there were times that it sucked. There were people that returned it that wouldn't have returned it before under different scenarios, but the overall macro we crushed. And so, yeah, I agree with that totally, John. The next thing I wanted to talk about, John, was like, what happens if the niche is good, the ads are good, the site appears to be good? I have one funny story. Have you run into any situations where those three are working and there's like just a little hiccup in the way?
There can be a few other things that might not be quite right that could be contributing to the business's performance. So, one of the areas that I'll look at is kind of the rest of the customer experience that's not on the site, right? So your site's there, but that's high ticket products. For example, often customers might want to call to complete an order or to ask questions. They're going to call you on the phone. So I'll look at things like, are you answering the phone? Right? Are you replying to messages? What's your system in place for doing that? And how is that happening? Are you manning your online chat at all? Like, what happens when people email your business? And literally sometimes I've had conversations where I've spoken to somebody and they're like, well, I work a full-time job and there's a phone number on my site, but it doesn't go anywhere. Like it doesn't even go to a voice message thing, right? It just rings out if I can't answer the call myself. And so the only time I can answer calls is like 8 o'clock at night. Well, guess what? Not many people are actually calling you then. So you've got to work out some sort of system and put it in place so that you can at least get back to people, if not talk to them live. And you would be surprised. It does sound like a basic thing, but, you know, I've seen on multiple occasions just, you know, problems in that space. Because often in the beginning too, when you've got a newer business, customers are more likely to contact you in those ways because they don't see a lot of evidence that your business is established or trustworthy, right? You don't have a lot of reviews. You don't have a lot of some other things happening. And so often people will look at your site and say, well, this all looks good, but I've not heard of these dudes before. And, you know, I just need an extra bit of, once again, this is kind of risk reversal. I just need a bit of extra assurance that this is a real company. And so they're going to call you on the phone and see if somebody picks up the phone, right?
I've literally had that happen, John, where they call and they're like, I just wanted to make sure you were a real person. I'm going to place my order now. And I'm like, oh, you know, thank goodness.
Yeah. And so for your first orders, I think that probably happens at a slightly higher percentage than it does down the track if you've got a business that's been open for years and years. Probably happens at a higher percentage of the time. But I've also had people tell me, you were the only business who answered your phone. And so I'm going to buy from you, right, in the high ticket space. And so once again, if you're thinking about increasing your sales or turning some sales around and things like that, you know, making yourself more available, yes, that doesn't necessarily accord with the 4-hour work week idea of sitting on a beach and making millions of dollars. Well, reality check, that's not how it works. Answer the phone, answer your emails, do it as quickly as you can, right? Yeah. And you'll make more sales.
When I look back, I remember having to hustle like that. So that's my advice. If you're not hustling, that's a big reason you're not winning in the beginning. You have to hustle. I remember being in the back of the building on my forklift and seeing Grasshopper or my phone ring or missed call from Grasshopper. I'd hit the email, I'd read it and be like, oh shit, I gotta go, you know? And I would drive all the way to the front of the building. My boss would give me a look like, what the hell are you doing? And I'd walk outside and be like, oh, just emergency, you need to make a call, right? And I'd walk outside and make a phone call, close the customer, walk up, be like, hey, I'm sorry, our systems are down right now, but I can walk you through the process when they tell me they want to place their order, and I'll walk them through the whole process. Like, you gotta hustle. You gotta answer every email. You gotta answer every phone call or return every voicemail, answer every chat. And I know what it's like to be working full time and, you know, have to sneak away to do this stuff. A big business I was part of in the early days, it was just us three partners, and one partner who was answering the phones would go into the conference room, shut the door, and call customers back on his lunch break. Like, that's just what you had to do. And so how bad do you want it? Like, if your niche is good, your ads are good, and your site is good, you're the problem. And so, like, hustle your way through this. How bad do you want to make these sales? And you got to figure out a way to make it work. I think too many businesses, they look at big businesses and it says, you know, we'll respond to you within 24 hours. And that's kind of become the norm for big businesses. But they're a big business. They've got a lot coming in. And number one, I don't even agree with that personally myself. But like, you can't do that. You can't say, we'll get back to you in 24 hours. Like, be the one who answers their phone. Like John said, I've had people call in and say, I just want to know you're real, or you're the only one who answered your phone. So thank you for answering my questions. I'm going to place the order with you today. And so hustle, 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 hustle for sure. In the beginning, you have to do a lot more work than you probably are thinking you need to do to get this thing rolling and get momentum moving.
And the minute you grab that momentum, you know, you can start thinking about, well, what can I put in place so that I don't have to do that? Because, you know, can I bring somebody on board, whether it's a VA or somebody local, to answer the phone for you and be that first point of contact, take it off your plate. That'll happen for sure. But it's not going to happen immediately the day you launch your business. You got to do that.
So I added one more in here to make it five, John, but it was funny. So I've actually had this happen a couple times. One person reached out to me and they were like, what's going on here? We went through this whole process and everything looked great. I was actually very impressed with their website, impressed with how they had their ad set up. Obviously gave them a couple tweaks, but there was nothing big in there. And we just could not figure out why nothing's converted. And they were showing me add to carts, which were through the roof. And it turned out that they had left their sandbox settings on their payment processor. And so people were getting to checkout and they just couldn't check out. And so you know, we went through this whole process and it turned out to be just a little fluke, right? So I would encourage you to check your settings. In fact, I've done this on one of my own sites. I entered some settings wrong, so people in my country couldn't check out for some reason. So we're all susceptible to making some mistakes, and you know, it might just be a settings thing. So by all means, grab something cheap on your website or something expensive. Who cares? You're not going to capture payment, right? And just add it to cart, go to checkout, enter your information, work your way through, make sure that a purchase can actually work, and you know, and then click cancel order if that's you using your own credit card, and just make sure everything actually works. Otherwise, you know, it's only happened a couple times, but it's definitely happened where it was some small setting that was the hiccup and nothing else was wrong. And boy, that really causes you to go down some rabbit holes of I suck at this. This is never going to work. When it, in reality, it was working great, but it was just one little setting holding you up.
Yeah, absolutely. So there you have it, guys. Literally, if you have an underperforming high-ticket dropshipping business or you're concerned that your performance is being held back, your problem or your resolution is going to lie in one of those five areas, 100%. It is not going to be anywhere else. So go through the process, look through that stuff. And of course, if you don't feel confident in knowing where things are not set up right or not happening right, find somebody with experience, talk to them, get some third-party advice from somebody with experience, and usually you'll be able to find the issue.
Thanks for listening to the Dropship Podcast. You can find all the show notes for this episode at dropshippodcast.com. And if you're ready to take the next step in your dropshipping journey, we invite you to join us inside Dropship Breakthrough, where John and I will walk you through step-by-step in starting your own high-ticket dropshipping e-commerce business. But that's not all. Dropship Breakthrough will also teach you everything you'll need to know to grow your business and take it to the next level. So head over to dropshipbreakthrough.com and sign up for our free training that will help you take the first steps towards building and growing your own profitable high-ticket dropshipping business.
John and I both love business, think about it all the time, can't turn it off, and don't know why anyone would want to. And because of that, we started a second podcast where we can talk about everything we've ever wanted to talk about in business. Not just dropshipping. We like talking about all things business. So if you want to hear John and I talk about all sorts of stuff, from camel meat dropshipping businesses to PDF dropshipping to a guy gambling $100 every single day on YouTube Shorts to how OnlyFans taught us lessons in business, we're all over the place over there, but it's a really fun podcast. So if you're a podcast listener, you love John and I, head over to your podcast player of choice and look for the Low Bar Podcast. You'll see a blue image and you'll see a cartoon version of John and myself. And go back and start at episode one. I promise you will not regret this. This is one of the more fun projects that I have done recently. I know John's having fun too, so we'd love it if you joined us. Check out the Low Bar Podcast on YouTube or wherever you prefer to listen to podcasts.